Yeah, g'day everyone. My name's Chris H and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Chris.
I'm gratefully sober today, and that's all due to Alcoholics Anonymous and the belief and a trust and a reliance on a power greater than me, which I found in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's a great honour to be asked to be guest speaker, and you know, I'll sit there thinking, we all go through the same thing, what I'm going to say, and then I'll sit down and go, I should have said this, and so I'll just blow all that out the window and just go with whatever comes. You know, I'm not going to tell you about me drinking story too much. You know, I was laughing with Peter and that before, saying, you know, I heard a guy say on the tape once, he heard this guy stand up and for 25 minutes he spoke about his drinking story, and then 5 minutes on his recovery, and he was saved for over 20 years. He said, that bothers him. And that bothers me too, because, you know, recovery is where I found all the trouble. I thought I had trouble when I was drinking, but coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and putting down the drink, you know, that's where the trouble started for me. You know, I drank. Picked up the drink at the age of 16, I fell into Alcoholics Anonymous at the age of 26, so it was not a lot of time drinking, 10 years of drinking, but I went downhill very, very quickly in those 10 years, and I finished up in places I didn't want to be in, and did a lot of things that I'm not proud of, and ended up hating myself for it. And the last year of my drinking, I found the most difficult, because I was trying to stop the thing I couldn't, and that becomes a problem when you're trying to stop when you can't. And I didn't tell anyone I was trying to stop, I was just trying to curb it, and because I couldn't see a life without alcohol. My whole life revolved around getting drunk. And besides, that's the way I cope, that's why I met women, that's why I talked to people, that's why I dealt with life. And so I can't perceive life without it. And so I come to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous because I gained a wife and children along the way and made those promises. I was going to be a good boy now, you know, a son was born, I'm going to be good. And I was unable to keep those promises. And I don't know why I made those promises. I couldn't keep a promise in my life. I kept busting it all the time. I had promises every day. And kept breaking them, you know. And so, you know, the wife had gone and left and took two kids, and she threatened to leave lots of times before, but this time she meant business and she left. And said, you're a good bloke, Chris, but you change. Something happens when you drink. And you're not the same person that I met, you know, 5 years ago. And I couldn't argue with that. I knew I wasn't the same person, you know. I'd become very angry and very intolerant and was doing things that went against my grain and went against the morals that I was brought up with. I was living a single man's life in a married man's world. And I often laugh, you know, if she did the things to me what I did to her, we wouldn't have been married for as long as we were, I can assure you that. I would kick her out a long time ago. But we demand that, you know, that's the way I think. And so, you know, I found myself finding Alcoholics Anonymous at the age of 26, and I'll never forget it. It was on a Wednesday night, and I live in Melbourne, and this meeting was about 25 minutes away, and the guy said, there's a meeting in Whittlesea, I'll meet you there. And I was 25 minutes away, so I said, oh, that's a bit far, I don't know if I can go to that. And, you know, that's the joke. If someone had a ring up and said, there's a barrel on, free piss, as much drugs as you want, I would have been there in a flash. And he said, oh, but he caught me. He said, oh, well, there's another one close to you on the Thursday night, I'll meet you there. And I couldn't say no. I said, yeah, all right, just to please him and get him off the phone. You know, So I finished up going to that meet, you know, it was in Reservoir, and I remember all day, the next day at work, before I was going to sleep, thinking, my head started on me, you're too young. You're not that bad. It's all them nose and they, just constantly at me all day. And I only taught myself out of not going. And I found myself at that meeting, and I saw the AA sign, and it was in a church, and I thought, fuck, it's religious. They got me now, you know, and I nearly didn't go in, and I'm glad I did, you know. I walked in, it was pretty similar to this, in a place like this, and I was watching Tony read the steps, and that's what I did, Tony, when I first met, and I come to him looking at that going, oh, nah, that's not really going to happen, you know, and all these people were happy. And I hadn't been around happy people for a long time. I was miserable. And that was the first thing I picked up from my first meeting. These people were happy. They were laughing and telling jokes. And I couldn't see anything to be happy about, that's for sure. But I left that first meeting, you know, and I don't know whether I got much hope, but I kind of related to what they were saying. And a little voice had said to me that I'm not the only one that feels the way that I was feeling and doing the things that I was doing and acting the way I was acting. I remember crying my eyes out all the way home, big tough me, you know, thinking, well, what do I do now? Life's over. They were saying a day at a time, but I knew they meant forever. And that's my first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. And they said, there's a meeting on Friday night. And I thought, oh, well, what have I got to lose? You know, I'm home alone, what have I got to lose? And and they told me to go to a meeting on a Saturday night, and the thing that won me about Alcoholics Anonymous, it may be small, it may be strange, but the guy that I met on the Thursday night was sitting in front of me on the Saturday night, and he turned around and smiled and said, "It's good to see you." And it nearly knocked me off the chair. Because not many people have been saying that to me for the last few years. Like, "It's good to see you." They were kicking me out or telling me, "Don't come back." And that dawned on me that night, you know, there might be something there. I started to meet a guy called Jelly Knight Jack, and I don't know what a Jelly Knight Jack looks like, but there was this old bloke, Pete knows him, and he was a pretty animated character. But, you know, they were the guys that kind of inspired me to start off with, you know. And I found while I was sitting in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, I wasn't thinking of a drink. And these people seemed to accept me, and you didn't seem to want anything. So it kind of blew me theories out the door. And then I said, remember asking the fellow one night, "What about that God you got plastered all over?" And he said, "Oh, it's your own conception or whatever you want it to be." And so they virtually closed the last back door I had out of this joint, you know, because I thought it was some religious organisation. Sort of funny thing, just getting off track, driving out of Coolum the other day on this, I think it's the, I don't know if it's the Church of England, or they've got this big sign up that says, "We're after spiritual fruit, not religious nuts." I thought that was pretty good to be hanging outside a church. I might go into that church, I reckon. Anyway, back on the story. So yeah, so I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm lazy by nature. And so I'm not going to do any of this, because where I come from and the things that I'd done, that means exposing some of that stuff. And I'd never asked anybody for help ever, and I wasn't a man to admit defeat. And I knocked around Richmond and Collingwood most of my life, and you didn't walk into the pub and say, "Hands up, who's got a higher power?" You know, it's like, you know, you stuck up for yourself and you pulled your bootstraps up, and, you know, you didn't show any emotions, and you certainly didn't ask anybody for help. So I struggled with that in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's one of my biggest struggles in Alcoholics Anonymous, was to ask for help. Because if I ask somebody for help, it means that I don't know and I'm weak and I'm inadequate and I'm useless. And I already knew those things about myself anyway, but if I actually ask somebody for help, then you'll know that that's what I'm like. But pain's a funny thing, you know. Pain motivated me to get into Alcoholics Anonymous, and pain motivated me. I was 3 years sober, and you've heard me tell the story. My wife said to me, "I liked you better when you were drunk." And I told you before, she said, "I didn't like you when you were drunk," and she's telling me, I couldn't argue because I liked me better when I was drunk, because I was a raving lunatic and wanted to kill myself and absolutely nuts. And I'd been in for a knee operation. I was 3 years sober, I went in for a knee operation, and they hit me with a general anaesthetic. I hadn't had any mind-altering substance in me, and something threw me. I came out of the operation, I was absolutely nuts. And thank God for AA members. An AA member saw it and said, "Come on, pick it up, we're going to this meeting." And it was a meeting I'd been warned to stay away from. It was one of those big book study meetings and one of those steps meetings that you don't go near. Because, you know, you don't go near those things because they don't know what they're talking about, you know. It's all about in speaker meetings. But I couldn't argue. I'm on a set of crutches and I'm suicidal and off my head. So I can't argue with this guy. So he dragged me off to this big book study, and Pete was there. And I knew Pete, and Pete had been around the same time as me. And I tell you what, he was on a different path that I was on, that's for sure. He was happy and smiling and on fire and happy to be there, and I'm miserable and sad. Said, "Then what are you doing? Like, you know, we've both been around the same amount of time. What's going on?" And said, "No, we've been getting stuck into this stuff. It's in the book, you know." And so that was my second introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. The solution was in the book there, you know. Because I tried to make head or tail out of these things, and I thought, must be this, then I must have to do this. Well, I've done the first three, isn't it? Because I've been around 3 years, so that means I must have done three steps. Because that's how it works, isn't it? You do a step a year, and it just happens by automatically. Because just stand up here admitting you're an alcoholic, step one, isn't it? So I thought, you know, and I started to understand that there's a lot more instructions for those things in that book there. And that expands on them greatly and gives me a lot more information. So it all started for me. There was like someone put the key in the door and unlocked it and let me in. I'd love to say it all changed from there on in, and life was hunky-dory. It was for a while. And it's like anything, again, I settle for comfortability really, really easy. It's easy to get comfortable in this show and just do the bare minimum. You know, I made a few amends and said a few sorry. I wouldn't call them amends. I said a few sorries to people and wondered why someone told me to jam it. You know, you've been saying sorry all your life, Chris. What's going to change, you know? The book talks about failing to enlarge upon our spiritual life. You're ahead of the trouble we do because alcohol is a subtle play. And if I thought I was in a bad way at 3 years sober, I was worse at 7 years sober. And I'm not telling you this to, you know, to expose myself and go, you know, I'm just lazy by nature, and if you don't keep doing this stuff, you're headed for trouble. And I'm a living example of that, you know. And because I'd stopped doing it, I'd lost contact with guys, and I become Mr. Know-it-all. I become what they call an alcoholicist. So I studied that book for 3 or 4 years, so I know it off by heart. I can quote page numbers, and I know it all. And I don't want to ever know it all again in this show, you know, because the minute I know it all, I'm in trouble, and keeping on the time too. And so it's at 7 years sober. I knew I was a fraud. I was standing up here. I was in a group that we used to go to called the Triangle Group, where you presented the book and presented stuff, and I'm telling everybody else what they should be doing, and I'm not doing it myself. And you can only get away with that for a certain amount of time, because Alcoholics Anonymous gives you a conscience. And some people call that a good thing, other people call it a bad thing. And I ran around for a long time without a conscience, but in here you get a conscience. And certainly the things I was getting away with for 12 months sober, I couldn't get away with 2 years sober. I definitely couldn't get away with it 7 years sober. And standing up here telling you all what to do, and I'm not doing it myself, it eat me from the inside out. And so again, I was in trouble. And again, the right people were putting me apart. I was to meet a woman that pretty much saved my life, you know, and she saw through all the ego and the bravado that had become. Harry Thiebold talks about it in, you know, Comes of Age, about the amazing recuperative powers of the ego. And if we don't keep it in check, it rebuilds itself and sometimes comes back worse than it was in the first place. And that's what happened to me. And so I met this bird, you know, through a set of circumstances. I went to a convention that I didn't really want to go to. That's how well I was going. My missus was on the committee for the Al-Anon there, and she dragged me by the ear off to the AA convention. That's how well I was going. I love going to conventions. I didn't want to go this time because I wasn't travelling well. I didn't want everyone to see how bad I was travelling, because that would mean that I'm weak and I'm inadequate and those same things. See, part of my illness wants me to look good at all costs. It will kill me. As long as I look good in front of you, it doesn't matter if I'm dying inside. As long as I put on a good show for you people and look good at all costs, it's going to be okay. You know, I don't have to live like that today, thank Christ for that. You know. So I go to this convention, and I didn't want to be there, and I'm standing behind her at the Al-Anon registration desks. Anyone who's been to conventions before, AA members don't stand behind their Al-Anon wives at the convention. So I finished up wandering off into this, was at the La Trobe University, and I finished up wandering in this auditorium, and there was a bird there that I knew, and I didn't want to talk to her. You know, we want to isolate. Part of my illness too wants me to isolate, so I don't want to talk to anyone. And this bird's going, Chris, over here. And I've got my glasses on, and I'm like, fuck. So I wander over, and she's sitting next to this older lady, and she started asking me some questions, and she sat me on my arms. And it's what I needed. You know, what I needed. She said, how long have you been sober? I said, oh, 7 years. She said, fuck, I wouldn't want what you've got. And I couldn't argue with that. I didn't want what I had. And she started asking me questions about stuff. Oh, where are you in the steps? And what do you think of this? It just blew me away. I was kind of baffled with the knowledge that I knew, and she had answers for all of it. That's just knowledge. What's your experience with all that stuff? You're just repeating stuff you read in that book there. And she was right. That's all I was doing. And I asked that lady for help that day. I was in enough pain and asked her for help. And she took me on a whirlwind ride through that big book. I can tell you, she punched the freaking ego out of me big time. You know, I went back through step one, and we turned every statement in that book, every line in that book, into a question back on me. It wasn't suddenly, all of a sudden, I wasn't reading about someone in a book. It was about me. And we worked through it, you know, and I was able to relate to what the hell was wrong with me. I kind of knew that I suffered from alcoholism, but I didn't get it internally. It says, you know, this is an inside job, and we have to concede to our innermost self. And I think I conceded to a lot of people, but I never really conceded to my innermost self. And surrender. And from surrender, you know, comes willingness to do what I have to do. And you know, I was pretty soon on my knees, you know, saying that third step prayer and then in inventory. And And it was a huge inventory. She wasn't going to let me, you know, get away with just, it was a huge inventory. And I had to write, it just took me 6 months to write this inventory. It was a huge inventory. Now, I'd done inventories before, but this was a thorough one. And I exposed pretty much everything. And I'll move on quickly because it goes pretty long. But I'm telling you this because these are the pitfalls that I've had in recovery. Now, I've been sober 25 years. And for the first 10 years, I struggled. After I met this woman and did the disciplined things I was supposed to do, it's been plain sailing ever since because I followed directions, you know. And so I had to do a fifth step with her. I'll tell you this because this is what really kicked the crap out of me. And she lived in Sydney, so I'd organised a flight. My wife was going up there on a business trip, who, by the way, came back. And so I went up there on a business trip, and I met this lady at a meeting, and we go down the beach to hear my fifth step, and she's got a team of women to listen to it. Seven of them, who I've never met in my life before. What do? I can't run. I've got nowhere to run to. And so I thought, well, you know what? What the hell? And so I sat there and did a fifth step with seven women, you know, and exposed all this stuff. And I'll tell you what they did. Not only did it kick the shit out of me, it made me not worry about my past anymore. My past had a big hole on me about all these secrets that I had. And today I'm very good friends with most of those women that were there that day. That happened like 15 years ago because we had a connection through me just being honest and sharing some stuff. Now, I don't recommend that for everyone. I needed that at the time. And I don't want to scare anyone off, but that's what I had to do. I didn't want to do it, trust me. And she made me, you know, make amends that I didn't want to do and pay back money that I didn't want to pay back and, you know, all this stuff. But what that did, it set me on this path. The path to recovery, and I started thoroughly following the path that was read out for Darren, read out tonight, you know. And boy, did I, things start to happen, you know, things started to change for the first time in life. You know, people that I'd harmed, you know, in the family and that started talking to me again. My family didn't talk to me for 5 years, and I was able to go back and truly make amends, not just say I was sorry for that stuff, go back and ask how I can fix this, what do I need to do to fix this. And is there any other way that I've harmed you that I need to know about? I don't just go and say sorry anymore. I go back and give them a chance to tell me what the hell I've done. A lot of stuff I did in blackouts, I can't remember. And boys, you want to be prepared when you ask that of your wife, I can assure you that, because they're armed with the facts about themselves. But, you know, I'm prepared to go to any lengths, and that's what happened for me. And so I don't see pain, you know, I see people in pain, and I don't try and rescue anyone in pain. Because pain motivated me to get off my ass and do what it is that I had to do. And, you know, and I had that sponsor for a long time, and then we parted company, and then I sponsored myself, which I don't recommend anyone to do, because you put a nut back in charge, and that's not good, because I agree with everything that I want to do and justify everything that I want to do. So I got a new sponsor about 5 or 6 years ago, and so I've had about four sponsors over the journey, you know, and I... For five counting me, and he's been in there a few times, which has probably been the worst times of my life. But because I was able to get over that fear of asking people for help. Now I don't worry about it. I ask if I need help, I ask people for help. If I don't know something, I ask somebody. Can you help me? What do I do? You know, and you know, life's just beyond my wildest dreams. Now shit happens. You know, I've gone through deaths and split ups and breakups and stuff, but you know, drink has not crossed my mind once in those things, you know, and I've been given things. I can talk about all the material things that have fallen into my lap, you know. The moment I cleared up all my financial amends, money came to me like you couldn't believe, which is so wrong or opposite of what I believe. You know, I don't want to pay back amends because, you know, I haven't got enough money to pay it back. But what I didn't understand was I was actually giving them their money back. It wasn't my money. And I think by doing that it's going to leave me short, but by ultimately doing that, you know, it freed me up with the universe, and the universe has a funny way of paying you back. And it's been like that, not with money, it's been like that with other things. The more I've tried to help people, the more people have come to me and given stuff to me and helped me along the way. And it just seems to be that spiritual axiom that it talks about in the 12x12, you know, the more I do this stuff, the more I get, you know, Bob, my sponsor, says God pays his workers very, very well. And that's what's happened, you know, and I use the term God because it's a universe. I kind of like, you know, spirit of the universe or the creator. I like the American Indians version of the higher power, you know, and that's what I use. I'm not a religious nut. you know, and I try and do the disciplined things, and I was getting a bit disciplined. Yeah, well, I was getting a bit undisciplined, and I asked this guy 6 years ago, and I'll finish after this next couple of stories, you know, and I was, because we all seem to fall down, those have been around for a while, in steps 10 and 11, yeah, it just seems to be we get through the big hunk of the steps, and we get to 10 and 11, and it's like plain sail and happy days here, and it's, I can easily see why, because there's promises in step 9 that are great promises, and step 10 there's even better promises, and it's easy to kick back the heels and kick off the shoes, and don't need to do so many meetings now, and I'll do a spot check inventory when things are going really tough, and all of a sudden I start filling that suitcase back up full of shit again that I carried around all my life, and I asked this guy for help, and he got me to do some stuff, and the first thing he said to me, I need to get you more disciplined. Now, I didn't tell him that I was undisciplined, but that's the first thing he said, and I'm thinking, what do you want to get me disciplined for? I'm all right, I'm doing enough. See how the head and the ego come straight back into it. I want to get disciplined. I ask God for help, and he's going to get me disciplined, but straight away I want to reject it, and that's what we do, you know. And he got me to do it. What I thought was a novel thing was do a written inventory every night on the 11th step, answer those questions when we retire at night. My time's... And he said, I want you to... He asked me to do three things. He said, I want you to do a written inventory every night. Four things, actually. He said, I want you to do at least four meetings a week. I want you to get involved with Alcoholics Anonymous. I want you to have a position in that meeting. I want you to get involved with service. And he said, I run a retreat over in Las Vegas. I want you to come over that once a year at least. There are things I can tell you, I'd love to say, yeah, nah, well, happy to do all that kind of stuff. But when I got off the phone, I went, you know, I won't tell you what I said. But, you know, that voice inside of me, and I often refer to that little voice that's, you know, that comes from down here, not up here, that says, you know, we've got to do this, Chris, we've got to do this. And I started to do those disciplined things, and, you know, my life become manageable, and my life become on a different path, and all of a sudden I had a zest for Alcoholics Anonymous again, and got involved. And not that I wasn't involved, but I was sort of on the outskirts again. You know? It's easy to flick on the outskirts in this show. And you know what? The people that I admire around this show, the people who have been around for a while, and guys like Peter and Norm and the older members, is, you know, that they've stayed involved. You know, I just spoke to a guy today who's come up here to do presentations in March, and the one thing that I see that parallels with all these people is that they stay involved. They stay involved with Alcoholics Anonymous, and they get involved with it, and they front up and they show up, you know. And they don't just front up and show up to meetings, they get involved with the meetings, they get involved with the Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole, as in service, and put their hand out and try and help others. And that's what I've tried to do over the last, you know, 10 years. And, you know, I was laughing before saying that 2015 has been a pretty ordinary year for me. You know, it's I left a family business not on good terms and probably blew away, you know, $700,000 that, you know, that's a whole other story. But, you know, and I ran that by people, and it would have taken a fight in the courts to, and I was in the right with it, but, you know, I spoke to my sponsor and he said, give it to him. Now, that's all right for him. He's a multi-millionaire. $700,000 is a lot of money to me. It's a lot of money to him. But you know what? After thinking about it a couple of days, I thought we'd cease fighting everyone or everyone. And I spoke to Pete about it, and you know, and I thought, if I ever want to reconcile this stuff, I have to sign that away. And so I came up here, you know, signed that, came up here, and the moment I signed that, there was a real freedom in that. The freedom, you know, I wasn't fighting that fight anymore and become free of it. And I've got to pinch myself, guys. I tell you, you know, I'm living in paradise. The biggest problem today is that the pools are overfilling because of fucking raining too much. So life's pretty damn good. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, and I just come up here with a bit of faith that everything was going to be all right, and I've been looked after up until this stage, and all I've done is tried to help others, really. All I've done is tried to help others. At the end of the month, you know, I run a retreat for my sponsors. I sponsor about 12 guys, and they bring all their sponsors, and we all get together, and we have a retreat together and do some meditation and do some meetings and do some, you know, do some stuff together, and it's fantastic. It's fantastic. You know, I've built the fellowship that I crave. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. It's great catching up with Pete again. It's inspired me to do more stuff again. You know, it's funny when we get together and we're all heading in the same direction, it inspires us to do great things. So thanks very much for letting me share.